on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The controversy over the German bishops and their decision to propose communion for non-Catholic spouses took a turn this week. We're joined by Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton for the latest. And Paul Ryan is stepping down as Speaker of the House and leaving Congress. We talked to Register staff reporter Peter Jesserer-Smith, who got to talk to Ryan this week about what it means for the Republican Party, for America, and for Catholics. Welcome to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio. And I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host, who's in Rome right now. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Greetings from Rome. It's always good to be with you.
So the German bishops approved guidelines back in February that would make it possible for non-Catholic spouses to receive communion under certain circumstances. I don't think we really covered this much. We might have mentioned it in some of our briefings from Rome. But the controversy prompted seven German bishops to make an appeal to Rome, and the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith rejected this proposal. But all of this has been a little shady, and we haven't seen all of the full details until this week. So, Edward, we're very glad to have you also joining us from Rome. Edward Penton, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Jeanette.
So, Edward, as I mentioned, you know, we've covered this story in print and we've covered it online, this story that we've titled amongst our editors, the story of German bishops' inner communion proposal. But I don't think we've really given our listeners on the show a sense of what's happening here. So can you begin by kind of giving us a recap of what the German bishops are trying to do?
Sure, yes. Well, this goes back to their spring conference, which took place on February the 20th or mid-February. And they voted overwhelmingly in support of a proposal, what they call a pastoral handout, to really give Holy Communion to Protestant spouses in mixed marriages, Holy Communion under certain circumstances and only in some cases. They specified those as being, for example, they have to be in serious spiritual distress. They have a longing to satisfy a hunger for the Eucharist. But problematically, I think for a lot of critics, is that they said that they don't need to convert to the church. That there's no call for them to become Catholics. They just have to take a serious examination of conscience with a priest or another person with pastoral responsibilities and affirm the faith of the Catholic Church. Now, this is quite a break, the critics mm-hmm. argued, because, of course, you know, if they would say, well, if they hold all these things, then they should simply become Catholic.
And, of course, this is something that the bishops voted on. How many bishops are there in Germany, and what? How did the vote break down?
Right, well, there are 67 bishops in total. There were 60 present, we've since learned, and that 13 voted against it, including seven diocesan bishops. So it was overwhelmingly voted in support of the proposal. But I understand there was quite a lot of pressure put on them. There was quite a bit of fear. There's quite a lot of sort of top-down cajoling that goes on in the German bishops, and so quite a few voted for it that may not have done otherwise. So, mm-hmm. but even so, it was heavily supported, and which Cardinal Walter Brandmüller, who's a very senior German cardinal, he called it a scandal that so many did vote for it.
So you did do a story, and this was before, I think it was before we had wind of this letter by the German bishops, but you did do a story just kind of asking many cardinals what their thoughts were on the proposal, and you got a few responses. You got many non-responses, but what were the responses besides Cardinal Brandmüller that you just spoke of?
Yes, well, I contacted over 23 or 24 cardinals to see what they thought about this proposal in March, and most of them didn't respond, but those who did, interestingly, there were three German cardinals who responded, they basically said, well, Cardinal Müller had already said that he thought it was a rhetorical trick. He said mm-hmm. that most of the faithful aren't educated in these matters, these theological issues, and so they don't know whether this is right or wrong. But he also said that a Protestant spouse receiving Holy Communion is not an emergency situation. So you can't say that this is they have sort of grave, serious spiritual distress. It's not that being in that situation is not exceptional, he said. And the same sort of comments were also echoed by Cardinal Brandmüller and Cardinal Francis Arinze, who used to be head of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. He said that he just simply ruled it out and said, certainly not. This is not the sort of proposal that the church needs. And also, there was a widespread criticism that the bishops' conference are exceeding their limits, and mm-hmm. that they shouldn't really be making these kinds of decisions, which have an impact on the faith as a whole, universally, not just in Germany. So there's a lot of concern about this proposal.
Well, to that very last point, Edward, seven bishops in Germany sent a letter to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in the Vatican, as well as the other offices in charge of Christian unity. And their concern included the very point that you just raised about the extent of power for episcopal conferences. But you've actually broken some news here because you've published the text of the letter. What exactly did they write to the CDF?
Yes. Well, what they listed four problems or four areas that they wanted clarification for. And they really are concerned that it's... that they're obviously exceeding the boundaries of or the powers of the Episcopal Conference, but also they really felt that shouldn't they simply become Catholic instead of just receiving Holy Communion? They wanted clarification about whether what is serious spiritual distress, and they said that that's for them. They think it's simply that that sort of belongs to ecumenism as a whole, and anyone who wishes or strives for church unity has that kind of distress. So they say it's not an exceptional criterion, but they said they have many other questions and reservations which they didn't put in this letter to the Vatican. But they did say simply that they didn't think it was right, and they don't consider this issue to be a pastoral one, but a question of faith and the unity of the church, which is not subject to a vote. So they're very concerned about this, and sent it to quite a few people in the Vatican, including Cardinal Koch, who's head of the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, who wasn't consulted about this proposal, and also Archbishop Ladaria, who heads the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Now, we know that Archbishop Ladaria had replied, and the reply was in the negative regarding this proposal by the German bishops. Two questions about that. First, what do we know about the CDF response, and why has it not actually been released?
Right. Well, we do know that it's a negative response. It was put together with Archbishop Ladaria along with Cardinal Müller, and they both, as sources have told me, that they have serious reservations about this and have rejected it. And it's also apparently had the Pope's approval, but we're not seeing it because the Holy Father has insisted that it not be made public. But I understand that it will be made public when or after Cardinal Wölki, who's one of the signatories of this letter of the seven bishops, comes to Rome with Cardinal Marx and four other bishops, German bishops. And apparently after that, we will know the contents of this response. But that it's all looking rather strange and a little secretive, which is unusual for the Vatican, especially on such an issue like this, which people say is in the public interest, and it's something which the faithful really do need to know, and need to in order to really understand what the Church really is teaching on this and what the position it holds on this issue of intercommunion. So a lot of questions there as well.
Well, and what the Church teaches regarding intercommunion, do we have a sense, perhaps, of at least Cardinal Mueller's position, based on the articles that he's been writing, most including the most recent one, for First Things magazine, where he asked the important question, who may receive communion? And it's a pretty blunt assessment. So is there a sense then that this document looks something like what he's just written for First Things?
Well, that's the impression. And it seems unlikely that he would contradict himself, that he's written an article. And I think he's pointing to the fact that this response will be similar to that. That's true, Matthew. And I think we're just going to have to wait and see, of course, what's in this letter. But I think the signals are that it's going to be similar to that. And obviously won't, and the CDF can't in any way contradict what the church has always taught about the Eucharist and what it's always taught about intercommunion, which goes against, as critics say, it goes against this proposal.
Mm-hmm. So very, very important stuff here. I mean, just like with the Moris Laetitiae, we're dealing with something that is just a core part of our faith, and that is who might receive communion and do so properly in full communion. And so very important questions. What is next? We don't have a lot of time, Edward, but really, what's next?
Right. For this letter, I think we're going to have this meeting with Cardinal Marx and Cardinal Wilkie. We'll find out then more about this story. But I think we're going to see also the German bishops trying to push this through. But everything really hinges on this meeting with the Holy Father and what comes out of it. We don't know when that'll be, but probably in the next week or two, I expect.
And have you seen this kind of stirring in any other countries? Is this a problem in England?
No, I mean, it's often talked about. It's often a contentious point, but nothing ever taken up to this sort of level. But I understand this has been going on in Germany for some time, and this wish has been a desire of the Bishops' Conference for a long time, and they see this as their opportunity to do it.
Well, not to be cheeky, but the German Church strikes again, and I think we need to do some exploring of the state of the German Church. So, Edward, we have some talking to do about that. But thanks, as always, for bringing us the latest and for breaking the story with the letter, the full copy of the letter. We appreciate it.
Sure. Good to be with you guys.
So for more information on that story, you should go to ncregister.com and look at Edward Penton's blog. That's where we have been chronicling this intercommunion issue with the German bishops. When we come back, Matthew and I will talk with Register staff reporter Peter Jesser-Smith on the decision of Paul Ryan to step down as Speaker of the House. This is Register Radio on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter, and I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, your host of Register Radio and the chief editor of the National Catholic Register. And of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, who's in Rome right now, Bella Roma. So Matthew, we're talking to Peter Jesser-Smith, who is our staff writer. So Peter, thanks for joining us for this segment.
Peter, oh, thank you, Jeanette. Always a pleasure.
You did something that no Register writer or editor has been able to do in many years, and that is nail an interview with Paul Ryan. So that was great.
Well, thank you.
So we had been pursuing this this interview, I guess it was since the executive order that was put out April 10th by President Trump, the executive order on reducing poverty in America. And we were not able to get that interview then, but it seems in the end he was stepping down, and that's when he said, okay, I'll give the Register an interview. It was quite a political earthquake, Peter. Did anyone see it coming?
Well, that was kind of funny, actually, because I had reached out to Ryan and asked his staff if he would do this interview, and then they got back to me and said, yeah, sure. I kept waiting for it, and then they got back to me and said, oh yeah, we'll turn it in by this day. I was like, oh great. And then when that day came, and he announced he was leaving Congress. So,
oh my goodness, the day he was supposed to be giving it.
Yes. So I said, I don't know if they're related, but
interesting.
But what was amazing for me, and I think it shows that this actually is still a priority for Ryan, is that he did. I had no hope for the interview after that happened, and then but he did come back, and he said he really wanted to complete the interview, and so we got this interview. So it was and it was really great. It's a great contribution.
So the interview is titled Paul Ryan's Exit Interview: Rethinking How a Great Society Helps People Rise. And so Peter, just give us a nutshell of what you felt were the key contributions Ryan had to make, especially in this interview. Like, how did he characterize his time in Congress?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, I think, Ryan's departure from Congress is actually going to be a real loss, I feel, because Ryan, as a Catholic and a conservative, was able to enter into a dialogue, with Catholic social teaching. And he really got serious and intense about it after the 2012 election, when he was taken to task for remarks about makers and takers. And I know that he had someone close to him challenge him to say, hey, Catholic social teaching is not all about government programs. Why don't you take a closer look? And he did, and he engaged in a dialogue with Catholic Charities and other people about this. And I think he really got a sense, there actually is an opportunity to make conservative policies not work on an individualistic basis, but really work on the common good, applying the idea of solidarity, that we have an obligation to our neighbor and to those most in need, but also subsidiarity, that we've got to deliver things at levels close to people. So there was a great productive dialogue that was there, and I don't think everybody has the intellectual chops of Ryan to try to deal with that approach. So, right. But that's one of the things that came through in this interview.
Yeah, well, Peter, we're looking at the resignation, the departure of a Speaker of the House, which under almost any circumstances tends to be pretty dramatic for the body politic. And with the GOP looking at the midterm elections with all of the controversy swirling around the president, what exactly do you see are the ramifications for the GOP losing Ryan at such a pivotal moment?
Well, I don't think it's good. and honestly, I think there is that general anxiety. The GOP has in the House has struggled to find leadership that can get everybody rallied and all their ducks in order. And honestly, I think Ryan had a very difficult time of it anyway. And I think he kind of saw that his opportunity to affect much good was probably, with this particular conference at an end. And people are not predicting good things for the GOP come November. Right. Now, anything can change, but there's an internecine leadership fight brewing. I don't think it's good for the GOP, and clearly I feel that there is a loss with Ryan stepping down, because he did have the intellectual chops to bring conservative policies away from an individualistic framework and into more of a framework of how do we serve the common good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's a part of the interview that I think speaks to what you're talking about right there. So in the interview, Speaker Ryan made the observation, and I'm quoting, "The federal government has a vital role in helping people fight poverty person to person, soul to soul." And that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, getting away from this sort of individualism. What do you think he meant by that comment?
Well, I think Ryan finally understood and was able to articulate that, no, we shouldn't be saying that government has no responsibility or involvement in helping the poorest among us, rise up, to give them, help them have a hand up as opposed to a hand out. And honestly, Jeanette, those words are not words that I learned myself from Ryan or anybody else. I actually, when I was in D.C. working at the EWTN office, it was the homeless men that I would talk to who spoke in this particular language. They didn't want a handout. He said, "I want a hand up. I can do the work. I just need a hand up so that I can get there." And Ryan eventually understood that. The problem with a lot of conservative thinkers is that they hadn't thought in these particular terms. It was more like a lot of conservative policies were associated with, the poor should pick themselves up by their bootstraps. But Martin Luther King Jr. made this observation I thought was compelling. It's not just to tell somebody to pick themselves up by their bootstraps if they have no boots. To help give them boots, then you can help them pick themselves up by their bootstraps. I think Ryan finally understood and intuited this through his dialogue and delving deeper into Catholic social teaching. And he saw where the opportunity was for conservative policies to be aimed towards a social vision and to really actually help people who are poor or depending on the government and wanted to be independent to rise up.
Mm-hmm. So this plays into what you're talking about, plays into another story that you wrote.
Yes.
That kind of it uses the interview, but also interviews other sources about Ryan's vision. And the title of this story is Paul Ryan's Vision for Alleviating Poverty, Changing Handouts to Hand Ups, just as you had explained. And,
yes,
you know, in the remaining part of the show, I want to get away from what we've already written to some of the conversations we've been having. And we didn't cover the Register reporters. We didn't actually assign somebody to write about the April 10th executive order by President Trump, which was to reduce poverty in America. But Peter, in conversations, in our editorial conversations, you've been bringing up, how does this executive order fare? What are Catholics who work with the poor thinking about this? So I'm not sure yet if you've been able to reach out to people, but what have you heard about the executive order?
Well, I think people are still looking at it and trying to understand how it's going to change the game. A lot of the news coverage out there has focused on adding, work requirements. But how that develops is going to be important to watch, because one of the things that is noted is if you want to get out of poverty, you need to be in a position to have the wages you need to be out of poverty and self-sustaining. Otherwise, what we call in Catholic social teaching a living wage. I have enough wages so that I can live without government assistance. Mm-hmm. That's what that means. And one of the things that I've noticed just reading through this executive order is that my guess would be that Ryan has had an influence on it. And it really seems to attempt to begin to get to some of the policies I've learned, how we do welfare are just perverse. And I'll give you an example. Heather Reynolds, CEO of Catholic Charities Fort Worth, pointed this out. We have policies that punish people with loss of benefits if they get married.
Mm-hmm.
Not only just that, if they're living with the father of any one of their children, they are going to get punished. There's financial disincentive, potential loss of benefits if they do that. However, if they're living with somebody who is not the father of their children, then there's actually a financial incentive. And it's not me saying this. It's an HHS commission study that found this already.
And surely this has to do with rules around single parenthood versus marriage and that kind of thing. I mean, is that why?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, so and here's Reynolds' point. If we want people to get out of poverty, we need to allow them to accumulate the assets and what they need to escape poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is one way of escaping poverty. But the government regulations are punishing people for doing what they need to do to escape poverty. This question comes up on the internet forums. What happens if I get married? People are planning to get married after they have a baby so that Medicaid can still cover them. You have people who are disabled trying to marry another disabled person, but they're saying, but I'm going to lose benefits and I'm going to be even poorer than before. And Ryan's point, and I think what this executive order is starting to get at, is we've got to look at all these government regulations and barriers that are punishing people for escaping poverty. Because the goal should be, at the end of the day, we want less poor people and more people in the middle class taking care of their families.
Excellent. Peter, you know, this has been such a great conversation, and I love this work. We want to keep you on it, keep you looking at it. It's a very important story, and for your thoughtfulness on this issue, especially of poverty. Remember to go to ncregister.com and look for Peter's story, Paul Ryan Exit Interview. That's the actual interview. And then, of course, he extrapolates this story a little further in Paul Ryan's vision for alleviating poverty, changing handouts into hand-ups. For more news and analysis and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online. And remember, you can get the podcast of this show at ncregister.com, too. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.